It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that MMA spot.
I'm so glad you joined me this week on the Amber May Show, because this week I'm going to be talking to Pastor Jamel Bouchard about his testimony dealing with cancer. I think all of us at some point know someone who've dealt with cancer, and he himself has never had cancer, but someone close to him did have cancer, and unfortunately, we didn't get the exact results we wanted to get in this case. So I'm going to ask him, why does he still preach? He's a pastor, so how come he still loves God, and how come he's still preaching about his word when someone he loved died of cancer? So welcome to the program, Pastor Jamel.
Well, thank you, Amber. Thank you, Amber.
So let's just start off a little bit. Give us some background about who it is that you know that dealt with cancer, and a little bit about his life.
Well, it was my brother, and his name is Milad. And he came to me and lived with me, and he came from Israel to here, and he was living with us, with me and my wife, and you know, and the kids. And what happened is, one day when he woke up, I realized that his bed was wet. I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I'm sweating. I sweat too much." I said, "This is beyond sweating too much." And I said, "Is there anything wrong with you? Is there anything that is wrong that I didn't know about?" He said, "Why?" I said, "It's just not normal to sweat this much." So he told me he had like a something growing in his thigh, you know, close to the growing area, and then I realized there is something not right about it. And I said, "What did they do about it in Israel?" So, well, they kept giving me antibiotics, and I said, "It hasn't gone away, did it?" He says, "No." I said, "Show me where it is." He showed me, and I felt it. It was like a tumor almost, and it was the lymph node swollen. So for that reason, I just decided to call on a physician and see if we can do a biopsy on that one. And that's where it started. So it ended up being cancer. And the form of cancer was supposed to be 90% cure.
And how old was he when you first discovered this?
He was about 18, 19 years old. You know, 18 years old. And it was very difficult when I heard it was cancer. Of course, it devastated the whole family. It devastated me. And back then, we didn't have the medication that we have today. And it wasn't, you know, it was close to the 90s back then. And it wasn't, we didn't have the medication that we have right now. And for that reason, it was really, we had to go drastic with him. And when it is in the lymph node, they had to check the liver. They had to check the spleen and see, especially the spleen, to see if there is any cancer there, or any of the lymph nodes, because most of the lymph nodes are in the spleen. And so they asked me, we need to do a biopsy of the spleen, and the only way to do it is take it off. And that was really difficult to make a decision on that one, because I felt like it's way too drastic, and there was nothing. So they took the spleen, and he became better. They put him on radiation. And from there, you know, for the first 12 years, he cured after the radiation. But we had to go through that step by step and just depend on God with it. And we just were hurting. You know, he's my youngest brother. Why did it happen? And we kept questioning, you know, what's going on? And we felt like medicine did not do him any justice. Where he came from, they didn't follow up with him. And now I have to follow up. And we were upset with this, that the medical field did not do much.
Were you upset with God, or was he upset with God? Did you guys blame God during this time, that why would a young man get cancer?
No, we did not blame God, because we knew it's just the consequences of life. Sometimes you get bad things happen to you. Has nothing to do with God, but has to do a lot with sin. If we know our theology well, the cause of all the troubles that came to this world was because of sin and because of man believed a lie and left God, and we carried the consequences. So we had to, basically I had to believe that God was with us, was good, and whatever came to us, we have to face it through his power, through his eyes, and with him on our side.
Okay, you said 12 years he was cancer-free, so that means he got it again in, later in his life. What
yeah,
was that
did.
Like?
He did, and that was most devastating time, because this time the cancer appeared in his spine, and as he kept saying, my back hurting. So we sent him to the doctor. He was giving him ibuprofen, and the guy just never really, the pain didn't subside at all. And what happened is, all of a sudden he goes to work and he finds out, you know, his back gives up on him. It just, and he loses senses in his feet, and he no longer can walk well. And he froze there because he couldn't feel his leg, and he said he was afraid to really move, because if he moved, he may have, you know, fallen down on his face and got killed. And so he froze, and he called on people to come and help him. And then he was just getting ready to be married, because he waited for 12 years to feel comfortable that if he gets married, he has no cancer, and that it would not be hard for a woman that he's going to marry. But finally, after that 12 years, when he decided to get married, it appeared just before his wedding day. Just a few days from his wedding day. And that was really the hardest for all of us, because now my family was coming to his wedding from Israel to here, to Phoenix, Arizona. And it was not a pleasant situation.
So, did he get cured from that bout of cancer?
No, he did not. He fell in that 10 percentile where they just would not cure. You know, like I said, lymphatic or lymphoma normally, and he had Hodgkin's disease, what he was diagnosed with, and they said it's 90% cure, and he fell into that 10% where there was no cure. He did transplants twice. And in the transplant, the first transplant, he was telling the doctor in the hospital, "Hey, you know, I'm having a lump in my on my neck," and she said, "Well, you're gonna die," and that's what the doctor said to him, "You're gonna die," and she was very uncompassionate at all. And if I was there hearing this, I would have probably just gave her a piece of my mind at that time. Because we were so hurting, you know, for him, seeing him that his body is going through deterioration, you know, they're killing every cell in him. And then all of a sudden they wanted to do what we call autologous stem cell transplant. You know, they took the stem cells from him and they introduced it to his body. But, you know, even before he came out of the hospital, he already have some lymph nodes are swollen, and this doctor came with that kind of an answer. He left home, and he was a very kind person, and he didn't make a big deal about it. He went home, but he knew he had the cancer back right after he left the hospital. And so it wasn't a pleasant situation. He continued in chemotherapy after that, and then we decided, let's do another transplant. My brother came from Israel. He was the only match that he could match. And I did my best to give him, you know, stem cells, but I did not match with him, even though we look alike. But the blood did not match. And so for that reason, a brother from Israel came and he gave the stem cells. And we have gone through that again, where he was between living and a dead. And because he had all his cells basically... the cells destroyed from the chemo, they have to do that and then put the stem cells in order for them to produce red blood cells and all other cells as the body needs. So, yeah, and it just was, this cancer was relentless on him and it would not give up. And finally, it took over his body, basically weakened him, and then he got... coxie, which invaded his body, and he passed, he went into a coma. And that's when I was with him, ready to take him home, because we felt like he is going to be now going home from the hospital, and he will be on chemotherapy, and he will live. But he didn't make it even till the end of that week. And so that was the most devastating time I felt in my life. And I felt so bad, because I left him that night, came the next day, seeing his body is just red, and like he was into the furnace of fire. And I said, "What's going on?" He says, "Why are you asking?" I said, "Your face looked like you've been in fire, burning." And all the nurses were giving him is medicine for pain, medicine for pain, medicine for pain. And I said, "How come you didn't look at every other thing he has? Look at him. Something is heaven, something is a problem with him." And finally they start moving, but by then he could not breathe on his own. And I told him, "Hey, I have to put you under the machine, but I want you to promise me to come out. I cannot help you right now. There is nothing I can do." And so you can imagine, as a brother, you know, devastated, trying to put my brother under the breathing machine, and he is going to be in a coma. He is not going to hear me. I'm not going to hear him very well. Whatever he has to say to me, I could not basically hear. And whatever I say to him, he's not going to hear it very well. But we had to go through that in order for me to give him a chance at life. But by then, coxie invaded his body. He starts swelling, and there was nothing I could do about it. And finally, he just passed on. And during that passing on, God was pouring his comfort in my life. And knowing that I love my brother very dearly, and I have to let him go. And so I thank God that I had him for close to 38 years. And I said, "Lord, he is your son, to do whatever you need to do." And I done my best for him, even though I felt like in his last few days I should have spent more time with him, because at that time his wife also left him and he was alone. And so it felt like I betrayed him by not being with him, but I had my obligation to my family and to my church and all of this. So, but God just was intervening and comforting me, and